So we mentioned that we're trying to figure out the entire story that happens between Yosef and his brothers and all the strange events that happen along the way. If we go way back when, remember earlier than page 232, earlier than Parshas Miketz, that Yosef is not liked by his brothers, thrown into a pit, almost killed, eventually sold, and ends up in Mitzrayim, becomes the viceroy, second in command of Egypt. Great. Almost 20 years later, we pick up the story, and it's page 232, Perek Membeis, Pasuk Aleph. There's a famine in Eretz Canaan. So Yaakov sends his sons, you gotta go down to Egypt. So they go down to Egypt to get food. They don't know that the head of the person who's giving out the food is their brother Yosef. But then nonetheless, they come down, and if you look all the way, the bottom of this page, on Pasuk Zayin, Pasuk 7, Vayar Yosef Esachav Vayakirin. So Yosef sees his brothers, vayisnaker aleihem, and he acts like a stranger. Vayidaber itam kashos, vayomer aleihem me'ayin basem. Where are you coming from? Vayomer me'eretz Canaan lishbar ochel. We're coming from Egypt, from Eretz Canaan. We need food. And vayaker Yosef esachav. So Yosef knows that these are his brothers. Vehem lo hikiru, and they do not recognize him. Now the next pasuk should just be, oh vayomer Yosef ani Yosef od avichai. And we would have cut out 2.5 parashios from the Torah. But the story continues. No, Vayiskar Yosef, just a few psukim to remember the story. Vayiskar Yosef asachalomos. Oh, he remembered his dreams. Asher chalam lahem. That he had dreamt. Now, when we first read this, initially we thought, Yosef is thinking about all the revenge he can get. Ah, these are the guys that didn't like my dreams. I'm going to get back in them. So Vayomer alehem miraglim atem. You're spies. So he accuses them of spies, and if you look here, this is the same source as last week. You look here at the top of the top source, it comes from the Abar Benel, Rav Isaac Dan Abar Benel in the 15th century. So he says, and the Ramban as well asks the same question, why did Yosef denounce his brothers? Surely it was criminal of him to take vengeance and bear a grudge like a viper. Though they had meant evil, God had turned it into good. What justification then had he for taking vengeance after 20 years? Remember that Yosef understands, one of the great things about Yosef is that he sees all the good that happens to him. Even though it was terrible, he was thrown into a pit, what happens? He becomes the head of Egypt. Otherwise, who's going to save his brothers when there's a famine? He sets up the whole institution for the Jewish people moving forward. So Yosef sees this. How could he ignore their plight in a strange land and that of their families suffering famine and waiting for them, particularly his aged father gnawed by worry and care?
He's testing them to see if they're the same type of
people. All right, hold on. No. So there's a few questions before we get to anything. The questions are, you're already talking 20 years later. 20 years later, Mrs. Mann, you have a great question. How come they come and he's not nice to them? That's the first question. Why when they come, he's not to reveal himself? What's he waiting for? And if he doesn't reveal himself right now, when it's Vayakirim, and he sees that they're their brothers, and yet he says, I'm not going to do it, then he's waiting for
to see if
something. Change. Well, we don't know what that something is.
Okay.
So Parashas Vayigash later on, two prakim later, when he finally says, I'm your brother, what happened then that it was time to reveal himself? But the deeper question is, what happened the last 20 years? When the brothers come, you have a good question. He's testing them.
Right.
What happened the last 20 years?
He was building up his reputation.
No, but we have no records, in the Torah at least, of any type of connection. Yosef to Yaakov, Yaakov to Yosef, and all of a sudden Yosef's brothers come down, and now we're all worrying, well, he's not nice to them. Well, what happened the last 20 years? How come no one's making a phone call? Yosef's a viceroy of Egypt, he's not looking, why doesn't he just find out if his father's still alive?
Good question.
So the story then, let's just review the story. The story continues. So they come down to Egypt, but they're missing
Benjamin.
Missing Binyamin. So he creates this whole plan. You got to go back and you got to bring Binyamin down to me. And they say, we can't. Our father's not going to want to let him go. You have to. And I'm going to take somebody. I'm going to imprison somebody.
But wait a minute. They said.
Oh, hold on. Let's review the story. I'm going to take Binyamin. I'm going to take Shimon. Then I'm going to send you all the way back. You got to bring back Binyamin. So then Binyamin comes back to them. And then they have this little meeting. Obviously, they saw that there's a Binyamin. Okay, he sends him back home. But he sneaks a little goblet into Binyamin's knapsack. Then they leave the town. Yosef comes running out. Hey, you guys stole something from me. They open up Binyamin's knapsack. And lo and behold, what's inside the knapsack?
The goblet.
The goblet. He accuses Biyamin of being a thief. The brothers don't know what to think. What's all this happening to them for? They don't know what's going on. Finally, they have another meeting. They all sit in front of Yosef. Yehuda, Parshas Vayigash, last week, Yehuda comes in. Let's just review that for a second. Parshas Vayigash, page 250. Vayigash, I love Yehuda. And Yehuda comes and he says, Vayomer, bi Adoni. He says, listen. Yidaber no avdachar davar ba'aznei Adoni. I need to talk to you. Vayichar abcha ba'avdecha. Don't get upset. Kichamocha kefaro. Adoni sho'ala savadani repeats the whole story. You asked me about our brother, and I told you he's with our father, and I told you our father was old. And finally he says, and our father, you know, is so sad because he thought he lost a child. Finally, Yosef says, I'm Yosef. That's the story. So the question we were dealing with is what happens in a parsha, almost a whole parsha. From the middle of Parsha's Miketz, when the brothers come down, what's all these events happening? He sends them back, he brings Binyamin, he imprisons Shimon, he finally gets them back, he accused one of being a thief. Why not reveal himself right away? And the real question is, what happened the last 20 years that nobody's talking to each other? So we shared a few approaches. Let's just review them quickly. One approach we shared was the opinion of the Ramban. The opinion of the Ramban is that Yosef was a divine messenger. Yosef had these dreams, and he felt, I need to make sure they happen. So when the brothers come down in the beginning of the story and they bow down to Yosef, what is that?
From the sheaves.
That problem is that it's not the sheaves. Because that's the dream, but there's no Binyamin. Everybody was bowing down. So Yosef really wants to reveal himself right away. He really wants to tell him that it's me, but he says, listen, I have these dreams. I got to make sure they become fulfilled. And therefore, what does he do? He sends back for Binyamin. And then Binyamin comes and they all bow down to him, and then Yaakov comes. Why can't he just tell Yaakov to come right away?
He wants to see.
How many dreams were there?
Two.
Two. Who bows down in the first dream?
The brothers.
Just the brothers. And the second dream is who? Hashemash v'ayoreach, father and mother, v'achad asar kochavim, and 11 stars. So therefore the first dream just had to be the brothers. So right away Yosef sees, oh gosh, there's only 10 of them. Where's Binyamin? So what does he do? He has to send back for Binyamin, gets Binyamin, and then finally gets his whole family. That's the opinion of the Ramban. What was the problem with the Ramban's approach? What's the problem with the Ramban? Think about it for a second.
It's all vengeance.
No, it's not vengeance.
No,
no one's going to agree it's vengeance.
No, he said that. Why did he take it upon himself?
Who's Yosef? Yosef's not God. God made Yosef have a dream. Very good. He had a dream. God didn't say you have to fulfill these dreams, or you're the only person that can make this happen. You're the facilitator.
Okay.
You had the dreams. I'll make them happen, says God. So Yosef thinks that finally the brothers come and he could reveal himself. He could cause a little less anguish to his father, and he says, you know what, I gotta wait and I gotta make the dreams happen. So that's a big problem with the Ramban. Second approach was that Yosef is trying to get his brothers to do tshuva. Have a little bit of repentance to them. They did an evil deed, and they got to go ahead and they got to go do tshuva. Notice, and we'll talk about this at the end, they don't really ever feel bad for what they did. And we'll get to this at the end, as to why they thought they had to do such a thing, what the reason, what the impetus might have been for them to do that. We lament this fact twice a year. When?
Tisha B'Av.
And Yom Kippur, the stories of the Asar Haruge Malchus, of the 10 martyrs, stem from both accounts, from the Roman Christian account and from the Jewish account. It was that this Roman ruler came to these sages and said, well, what happens if a Jew kidnaps another Jew? And they said, you have to pay him back. So they said, well, you brothers stole Yosef, and no one ever paid them back. And that's we have the story of the Asar Haruge Malchus.
Oh.
So they did a bad deed. So Yosef says, you know what, I'm going to get them to do tshuva. What we talked about last week, the ultimate tshuva, what we call tshuva gemura, complete tshuva, is only when a person is in the same situation, feels that he has the same passion and desire for that sin, and doesn't do it. That's tshuva gemura. So what is Yosef want? He wants to see if the brothers did tshuva or not. He's going to help them do tshuva. Well, how is he going to help them do real tshuva?
Because
bringing
I got to get a scenario. I was my father's favorite, and I was thrown in a pit, and no one cared about me. Let's see how the brothers react. So who's the new favorite?
Benjamin.
They bring Benjamin. Finally, he gets Benjamin down. He then has to do another plan to get Benjamin almost thrown in prison. And then let's see what happens.
If he wants to see if their nature has changed.
The nature has changed. Exactly. And what do the brothers do? The Yehuda says, no, we got to bring back Benjamin. So that was the approach of the Abarbanel. And that Kedas Yitzchak, the same problem as Mari said, as we have with the Ramban, Yosef, who are you? You're not the one that's supposed to create the tshuva. You waited 20 years to get some repentance, and God, they'll take care of it on their own. You caused your father, was it really worth all, was that the risk? Why, you're going to wait all this time to get a little bit of tshuva? It seems a little strange. So we're going to, then we finally, we ended last week the opinion of Rav Hirsch. We'll do it quickly now, but we'll come back to it at the end. And this was an amazing approach. The approach from Rav Hirsch was that Yosef had to see two things. He had to see that he had changed his perception of his brothers, and that his brothers had changed his perception of him. We're going to come back to this at the end, but let's
not necessarily why of him.
Hold on, let's see. So
that
let's
they really changed that they so were concerned about the other brother rather than throwing him in a pit. They weren't the jealous. Jealousy did not come out the way they did of Yosef. They knew Binyamin was a favorite now. He was the youngest.
You're asking why does Yosef have to change his perception of his brothers?
No. Well,
or why does
yes, and they have to prove themselves that they had changed. That one was ready to give himself up for instead of Binyamin.
Right.
They would never have done it by throwing Yosef in the pit at that time.
Right. Okay. So that's what a first develops. Okay. So what I want to do is, I want to share with you a very fascinating approach, as I promised last week, that's offered by Rav Yoel ben Nun. Rav Yoel ben Nun is one of the leaders in Tanakh learning today. So he suggests an entirely different approach. Everybody's wondering, how come Yosef, here's Yosef, he's the head of Egypt, he's the viceroy, he's second in command. He's got all this power. Notice how no one ever tells Yosef he can't do anything. He throws him in prison, he takes he's in charge. So why didn't Yosef make a phone call in 20 years? 20 years, you don't think he could have sent out the messenger? Yeah?
Well, he had their self-imposed harem, so to speak, where they had this, considered, they had 10 people, whether they count Yosef or whether they count the Ribbono Shel Olam, and then they decided you can't, like they said, this is what I seem to remember, that they agreed upon themselves not to discuss or to reveal
right.
circumstances.
But why didn't Yosef find...
Well, that's the question. Was he part of the...
Yeah, so what you're talking about is there are midrashim that talk about that Yosef did send people back and that everybody was in on the plan. It's very possible. I want to share with you more text of the psukim. From the text of the psukim, it doesn't seem there's any type of communication. But you're right. There is a lot to say that perhaps there was a whole different plan going on. That the brothers didn't want to talk about anything, that Yosef knew what was going on, and Yosef actually tried to send messengers, and then maybe they were killed. There's a whole different side to it.
There also a midrash that said something about when Yosef was taken by the caravan or something, one of the brothers said, just don't say anything to your father. He had to have silence.
Could be. The problem, to quoting all the midrashim, is that if we're going to quote all the midrashim, we're going to have contrasting midrashim. So that's... That's a general, but it could be. So everybody's wondering,
maybe it was just better to leave it alone, because that way Yaakov wouldn't be any more hurt than he already was. if it kept stirring up by trying to make communications between them and Yosef, it would be very hurtful to the old father.
Well, if Yosef finds out that his father's alive and he goes back?
Mm-hmm. No, if the father realizes what the other son has
yes,
done.
Yes, right.
So you're right. The issue with Yosef is Yosef's not necessarily worried about just short term. Yosef understands that his dreams meant something about the future of Jewish history, of the participation of 12 people. So Yosef, besides just wanting to contact his father, and Yosef's probably he'll get over it. Maybe he won't tell his father what had happened. But Yosef is also nervous and concerned about future of Jewish history. And I can't be here, and they can't be there. We need to be together. So in some way, someone's got to find out something. Now...
But But also, the thing you're missing here is that this is the timing of the famine. So with the order of what his dreams are, this was the time that they had to go down to Egypt to ask for food. It wasn't that it was like all these years earlier that why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have them wait all these years when the famine actually happened that they needed to go to ask for food. So the timing is, I think, has nothing to do with the brothers and the father. I think it has to do with Hashem's plan to get them down to Egypt at this time to finally reveal himself.
So what we're asking is that that's true from the brother's standpoint. Maybe the brothers didn't want to know what happened to Yosef, but why isn't Yosef finding out what happens? Hold on. So let's remember, where was Yosef when the whole plan develops? Where is Yosef?
In Egypt.
Not in Egypt. When the rich, everything happens, when they decide what to do with Yosef, where's Yosef? He's in a pit. He has no idea. Don't forget, we know the story because we read the story. We know what the brothers planned. We know what happens to Yosef. But Yosef has no idea what happens, what their plan was. Yosef doesn't think that they're going to go back to his father. Yosef has no idea. We know that they go back to his father. And they say, Yaakov, your son died. Look, here's his bloodstained coat. Yosef doesn't know that's what happens. Why does Yosef think that Yaakov thinks he's dead? We never think about that. Why would Yosef think that Yaakov thinks he's dead?
Because they're showing him a coat with blood on it.
He doesn't know that. He's in a pit.
No, he disappeared.
He came back.
Yosef.
Don't forget, Yosef goes to his brothers. Okay? Your brothers throw him in a pit. Now, Yosef, from now on, knows nothing, because he's then taken out of the pit, as we learned a few weeks ago, by these Arab merchants, or these Midianite merchants, whoever it is, it's not the brothers, and they bring him down to Egypt. Now, Yosef, most likely, very common sense oriented, is thinking, you know, maybe they weren't happy with me, throw me in a pit. I'm here in Egypt, someone's going to come save me. So he waits a little bit of time. He's in prison, nobody's coming. Finally, gets out of prison, and he hasn't heard anything. If you're Yosef, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Is it, well, they probably just think I'm dead? Or is there something else to think about?
They think he's dead.
Okay. Maybe they don't want him. Maybe Yosef is the rejected one. Don't forget, let's go back for a second. Let's go back to the beginning of the story. Perek Lamed Zayin, where is it? Pusik, page 202. It's very plausible that Yosef just says, you know what? I'm not part of the family anymore. I've been completely rejected. And there's a lot of reason for Yosef to think this is the truth. So go back to page 202.
What does he think his brothers told the father?
It could be that Yosef. Remember, Yosef doesn't know what they tell his father. So it could be Yosef comes out of prison and says that Yaakov is complicit with what happens. Yaakov is in agreement with the fact that they wanted me out of there. I don't. Maybe Yaakov doesn't think that I'm dead. But maybe Yaakov says, you know what? Yosef no longer has part of this family. Look at the beginning.
It stands to reason if you think about it, because like in our world, we think like you're not sending your kid away. But where he comes from, they sent away Yishmael.
Very good. So let's do two parts. First, page 202. Yosef just had two dreams, and his brothers hate him. We know that they hate him.
Right.
And Yosef brings back Dibasam Ra'ah El Avihem. Yosef tells Lashon Hara on his brothers when he's a young lad. Okay? Now he has these dreams. His brothers do not like him. All of a sudden, Pasuk Yud Beis Parshas Vayeshev Perek Lamed Zayin Vayelchu Echav Liros Et Son Avihem Bishchem. The brothers, they leave. They got to take a breath of fresh air. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef. Listen, Joseph. Halo Achecha Ro'im Bishchem. Your brothers who hate you just went out to Shechem. You know what I want you to do? Lecha Ve'esh Lachecha Aleihem Vayomer Lo Hineini. Are you crazy? My brothers hate me, and you're going to send me to see them. What's Yosef supposed to think when his father says this?
He doesn't love him anymore.
You're sending me away to see my brothers that don't like me. How do I just stay here with you, Tati, and I'll wait till they get home? That would make a lot of... What good of it? Say hello? And then he goes, and the brothers don't like him. And then they throw him into a pit. There's a lot of reason for Yosef to think, I don't know what Yaakov thinks about me, but I know one thing. He doesn't want me anymore. Not only that, every generation so far has had a reject.
Yeah.
Every generation has a reject. Yitzhak's generation rejected Yishmael and the B'nai Keturah, another people that aren't allowed to be part of the, you know, the Jewish history. Yaakov rejects Esav. All of a sudden, we're left with the next generation. Well, who's the reject going to be? It's got to be Yosef. It's got to be somebody. So we all wonder, how come Yosef doesn't make a phone call to Yaakov? And Yosef's wondering, why isn't Yaakov making a phone call to me? And if I haven't heard a phone call, why in the world am I going to reach out to a family that doesn't want me? That makes a lot of sense. We spend a lot of time in the Arban's approach and the Abarbanel and the Keraz Yitzhak wondering, well, when the brothers show up, how does he act towards them? And that's a lot of good questions. But the bigger question is, what happened the last 19 and a half years? And it makes a lot of sense that Yosef feels no need to make a phone call if they don't want him. That's why when they come, he accuses them, he has his whole plan. Who is Yosef's... Yes?
How would Yosef's family know where he was? He knew where they probably were, their home. But how would they know... How would they know where Yosef...
It could be he doesn't know where they are. It could be you're right. That is no way of finding out where they are. Now, Yosef is a very powerful person. It could be he could send messengers and spies. But maybe not. Maybe they're hiding somewhere. But the question is, when they come to Mitzrayim, and Vitzvayaki Reim, everybody wants to know, why does he not reveal himself? It makes a lot of sense why Yosef's not revealing himself right away. Because the family doesn't like him. But so Yosef needs to see
if they're
not jealous anymore, not even if they've changed. We're not worried necessarily about change. All right, the brothers will change at some point. They'll do tshuva. What does Yaakov want to see?
His father.
No, what's Yosef's problem? What's he been worrying about for the last 20 years?
Do they want me?
So what does he have to figure out now?
Do they want me?
So Yosef has a plan. So Yosef figures, I'm the reject. Who is Yosef's mother?
Rachel.
There was only one other son of Rachel.
Binyamin. They want to see.
So what does Yosef have to do? Well, let's see. If it's true that the B'nai Rachel are the rejected ones, well, then I got to have a litmus test. So when the brothers all come down and they're missing Binyamin, Yosef says, I got to wait. Let's go see. Bring down Binyamin to me. If they bring down Binyamin and they show a favor, you know, they're showing favorably towards him, like Rav Hirsch says, when they bring Binyamin down, Yosef wants to see, how are you acting towards Binyamin? Is Binyamin like me? Is he rejected? Or is he accepted? And if he's accepted, then I'm accepted as well. He doesn't know. But don't forget, Yosef doesn't know the plan. So Yosef is under the assumption, you can have questions with this. There are questions with Rabbi Yoel ben Nun's approach, but it's fascinating, because Yosef doesn't know what happens. He's in a pit. He's assuming, after nobody calls to find out about him, well, maybe I'm rejected. Let me find out if this is true or not. He brings down Binyamin, the only other son of Rachel, to find out. And as the story continues, he realizes that Binyamin's not rejected. And then we throw in the fascinating approach from Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch understood that Yosef would have loved to reveal himself 20 years in the past. But Yosef had to wait. Because he wanted to see, if had the brothers come down right away, see, there was one loose end to this approach. The one loose end to the approach is that everything makes sense. And he gets Binyamin and he sees, you know what, they like Binyamin, that's great. But when Binyamin comes down, why doesn't he just call Binyamin into his office and say, Binyamin, oh, what's going on? Do they like you? Are they nice to you? And if Binyamin says, yeah, I'm one of the Shvatim, so then that's it. Why do they have to create more? What's the goblet and the accusing of a thief?
If they've
so then Rav Hirsch has the approach, and not just to see if they've changed. Yosef has to see that he's changed also. So Yosef, we'll just read it for a second, because it was a fascinating approach from Rav Hirsch. Again, as we mentioned last week, it's very hard to assume that Yosef is just not being nice. Because A, Yosef is called Yosef HaTzadik, and if somebody is going to spend 2.5 prakim taking vengeance, I don't think we would have spilled this much ink talking about it, and I don't think we would call him Yosef HaTzadik. Second of all, if there was any of the commentators to say Yosef did something wrong, it would have been the Ramban, and it would be Rav Hirsch. they are in many places will say that Yaakov doesn't do the right thing, that Avram didn't do the right thing, that Shimon and Levi, when they raised Shechem, didn't do the right thing. Rav Hirsch is not shy about talking honestly about the imperfection of the Avos. And here Rav Hirsch says it can't be. It can't be that this is just not a nice guy, because Yosef is a smart guy, Yosef's a nice guy, it doesn't make sense. So if you go towards the middle of the paragraph, we'll just read it again, where there's the three dots. So Yosef felt that he would have to bring about two changes before he could make himself known to his brothers. He should be able to change his opinion of his brothers, and above all, his brothers should change their opinion of him. Their feelings towards one another would have to change completely in order for a warm and close relationship to prevail between them. And the brothers come down right away, and Yosef would have said, "Oh, guys, it's you? Guess what? It's me." That would have been horrible. Why would that have been horrible? Because it would have, Yosef, the guy that we thought we killed. Yosef is waiting because he knows he has to achieve some type of unity. When the brothers come down, Yosef says, "I remember my dreams. Remember Vayiskar es achalomos." Doesn't mean that he says, "I got to take out revenge." But in the dreams, what is Yosef depicted as? As powerful. So Yosef says, "I got to be the leader. I have to act as a leader. There's a famine in Canaan. My family's going to come down here. We cannot function as a family if right away I reveal myself and they're just, all that hatred's going to come back. All that hatred's going to come back. They're going to be upset with him. He's going to maybe still feel upset at them.
But also they'll look down at him as their younger brother."
Exactly. So Yosef cannot, Yosef has to wait. He waits 20 years because he has to wait for the right moment in which when he reveals himself, everybody's going to shift their opinions. Everybody's going to go 180 degrees. So he waits. And they come down, and he has all these tests. Continues Rav Hirsch. Otherwise, in a very beautiful line, "Even if Yosef were physically restored to his family would be lost to him and he to them. That's no way to function as a family. It was only natural that Yosef bore resentment towards his brothers. These feelings could be erased only by proof that his brothers had undergone a complete change of heart. It was therefore necessary to test his brothers to see whether they would again be capable of depriving their father of a son, and this time for real and compelling reasons. This test was a vital import for Yosef's own feelings." They had to pass the test. So we'll continue the next page. Rav Hirsch continues. If the brothers hated him when he wore a little Kisonis possum, says Rav Hirsch, how much are they going to hate him?
He's the boss.
When he's dressed like a king. So he continues. "But the second and perhaps even more important consideration was this. Yosef remembered the dreams. How they had caused his brothers to suspect him of lust for power, to the point that they felt threatened by him and consider themselves entitled to commit even the gravest of all crimes that suppose self-defense. This was the case when he went about them among them in his embroidered coat. How much more would they now have to fear him when he was only not a king, but also had cause to hate them, and a matter of a noble soul to take his revenge on them?" Imagine when the brothers are sitting there and he says, "You're spies, and guess what? I'm Yosef. What are they going to, this guy's going to kill us. He's going to hang us. He's going to take all his revenge. He's going to walk us around the town pouring garbage on top of us." So therefore, it was imperative the brothers should come to know Yosef's true character. And towards this end, it was necessary, first of all, to appear before them in his actual position of power. They had to be made to realize that he could do with them as he pleased. If nevertheless he would deal kindly with them and repay evil with good, he would have reason to hope that this would cure them of their erroneous notions about him. Yosef wants them to know that I could do whatever I want with you. Mm-hmm. Continues the verse, in short, at the moment when he would identify himself as their brother, Yosef, the blindfold would drop from their eyes, and at that moment, it would be possible for both Yosef and his brothers to completely erase the past. Only thus could Yosef hope to be truly restored as a son to his father, and as a brother to his father's children. If we're not mistaken, these same considerations were also the ones that kept Yosef from establishing contact with his father during the years of prosperity. What good would it have done his father to regain one son but lose 10 others, and to see tension and enmity prevailing between his brothers? Rav Hirsch ties everything in the end together. Perhaps we're suggesting that Yosef doesn't have a need to call anybody back because he doesn't think he's part of the Jewish people. Every generation has a reject. The Yishmael was rejected. Esav was rejected. And now Yaakov, every generation, they have to pick the leader. So Yitzhak first thinks that both of my sons are leaders. Yaakov and Esav, then he realizes it's just Yaakov. Yaakov, though, realizes all of my children are leaders. But the question is, well, someone's got to be rejected. So Yosef says, you know what? It's got to be me. Maybe it makes sense when my father sent me out to go find them. Maybe they were in agreement. They had a little plan together. They all got together. They said, listen, Yaakov, we'll go out ahead. You send Yosef and whatever, we'll sell him, we'll do whatever we want with him, but we'll get him out of your hair. Yosef doesn't even have a phone call in the whole first few years in Egypt. He agrees. When the sons finally come down, Yosef can reveal himself right away. He A, has to see if he's accepted, and B, has to see how everything's changed. Is it really true that they can see me differently, and can I see them differently? I'm the one in charge. If I still don't like them, then I'm not going to be happy with them here. So therefore, he creates this plan with Binyamin. And in one fell swoop, he sees that the brothers have changed because they saved Binyamin. And the brothers see that Yosef is not somebody that's angry towards his brothers because he could have taken revenge. He could have jailed them, could have killed them. He could have done whatever he wanted. And he dealt with them kindly. And finally, at that moment, right after the... let's just go back to last week's parsha for 1 second. And I'll show you how this just fits in with exactly what this approach that we're developing. Back on page 250. So go to Pasuk 26. So Yehuda is telling this whole story to Yosef that we went back to Egypt, we went back to Canaan, we talked to Yaakov. Vanomer, and we said to his father Yaakov, Lo nuchal laredes, we can't go back to Egypt, we needed more food. Right, we can't go back without our brother. It's impossible to see this person. Remember, they go back, and they, as you pointed out last week, it seems a little bit strange that we wait so long until the food runs out. But then they go back, and they tell Yaakov, we need to bring Binyamin. We can't get food without Binyamin. Our father said, Atam yedatem, and then this is what Yosef is hearing from Yehuda. He's replaying the conversation. It says, our father told us that Atam yedatem, you know, Kishnayim yolod ali ishti. My wife gave me two children. Who's my wife? Rachel. Who are the two children? Binyamin and Yosef. Vayetzeyo echad me'iti. Now, the first time Yosef hears what his father thinks. And he says, Yehuda says, Yehuda quoting Yaakov, Vayetzeyo echad me'iti, I had one. Va'omar ach torof toraf. What happened to him? He's killed. V'lo risivad heina, and I haven't seen him. Ula kachtem gam esem im panai v'karo'u ason, you're going to take this one from me, Binyamin. Let's say something happens. V'horadatem esevasi bira'o sha'ola, I'll be completely in utter depression. This is the first time that Yosef knows what Yaakov thinks. He was in a pit, he doesn't know what his father thought. So for 20 years he thought that I was rejected. And now what does he think about Yaakov? He just thought I was dead. So only a few psukim later, what does Yosef say? It's me. Ani Yosef Ha'odav Yichai. Now Yosef has finally had the right moment to reveal himself. Yeah.
Why does he ask, is my father alive, when he clearly...
Alright, so yeah, that's another question. It could be that here he's a little bit of rebuke towards his brothers. Ani Yosef Ha'odav Yichai, meaning, well, you didn't care about my father's life when you threw me into the pit, so what's the difference? But that was a little more of just Yosef's a little bit of trying to the Medrash has a famous comment here that when Yosef, if you look at the next you turn the page, it's Pasuk Gimel, Perakim Hei Pasuk Gimel, that's where Yosef finally reveals himself. So he says, Vayomer Yosef al Achav, ani Yosef Oda Vichai, I'm is my father still alive? V'lo yachlu Achav la anos oso ki nevalu mi panav. Yeah, the brothers can't answer. They're speechless. So there's a comment of the Medrash that says, "Ay lanu liyom adin, ay lanu liyom atochacha." Woe is to us the day of judgment, the day of rebuke. That Yosef rebukes his brothers about one little act that they did. It was a big act, but it was one sin. And they're speechless. So the Medrash says, after 120 years, we're going to go to the throne, or we're going to be speechless. Certain, like the brothers, certain excuses we made, certain justifications that we had. Right, this is a good Rosh Hashanah speech. Certain things we run our lives by, like the brothers did. They thought they were right the whole time. And finally, Yosef reveals himself, they got nothing. They're sitting there in court, they have no argument. But again, now it's Yosef find the right moment. Because A, he's seen the brothers have changed, because they feel bad for Binyamin. They stick around. And he's changed. Now I understand, hey, my father just thought I was dead. Maybe it was a misperception. Yosef had no idea of knowing. Finally, after the whole story, bringing Binyamin down, finally has reason to believe. That's what Rav Hirsch says now, he can reveal himself. In one fell swoop, everybody's changed their perception. Yeah, Judy, you had something before or no?
No, just that, you know, also, why didn't Binyamin go down with all of them in the first place?
Yaakov doesn't want him to leave.
He's got to have someone left.
He already lost the chest. That adds to the whole, yeah, that adds.
So it was a setup from the start.
Mm-hmm.
You make a strong hypothesis, but you could make a completely different one altogether.
Okay.
I mean, Joseph is playing God, and Yaakov is saying, I have two children. How blatant is that? I have two children.
So what's the...
What, he ignores 10 others?
No, he said, I have two children from Rachel. That's,
I know that, but that was the ones who counted.
That's right. They always said he was a favorite.
I know that, but you can... Yosef becomes pompous and he's going to play God.
So if anything, I think this point says Yosef's not playing God, Yosef's playing leader. What Yosef's trying to do is saying, my family's coming down to Canaan. This is, everybody knows, this is, whether it's Yaakov's Ruach HaKodesh, whether it's the fact that there's a famine in Israel, this is going to be the future home of the Jewish people. Last week's parasha, everybody moves down already. So Yosef knows that I have to create family unity. So if Yosef right away reveals himself and doesn't do this whole plan according to Rav Hirsch and according to this approach, then everything unravels and everybody's going back to where they fell 20 years ago.
You're assuming that, but you can assume after 10 years if you find yourself, they're so thrilled and excited to be found. It's all you're thinking.
Correct, but...
It could have been the other
way. But it's not necessarily a hypothesis, because Yosef's problem and our problem is what they did to Yosef wasn't nice. So the question is, how are they going to know? So if Yosef feels they threw me into a pit, maybe they feel bad, maybe they don't feel bad. I don't think if in my own assumption, if Yosef is thrown into a pit, his brothers try to kill him, whether it was next year or 40 years from now, he's not going to like them unless it's proven to him that everything has changed, especially if they're going to be living in close proximity of each other. They have to get along. The only way to know that they get along is to see that what happened with Binyamin.
That's the point. Because if they had not changed, they would have taken Binyamin. They did not want to take a chance of the father being desolate with a second child.
So I'll finish up with the following, because we've developed the last, really, since beginning of Bereishis, we didn't really get a chance to talk about Parshas Vayechi this week, but Bereishis is really coming to an end. And we've developed sort of the whole way through the creation of the choosing of the leaders of Avram and Yitzhak and Yaakov and so on and so forth.
May I ask you a question? Somewhere did I read where Yaakov knew that they were going to have to be in Mitzrayim?
Yeah.
So now this was the beginning of the period of Mitzrayim and slavery and all this.
Okay. Yeah, that's, if you look, so what happened, Yaakov then, there's a famous meeting between Yaakov and Esav. So Yaakov leaves, he goes down to Egypt, this is last week's parasha, and you go to, hold on. Yeah, the top of page 264 is the meeting of Paro and Yaakov. It was a much anticipated meeting. Page 264. Then the top. Vayomer Paro finally comes. Paro and Yaakov was two famous people. Everybody knew about Paro. And everybody knew about Yosef's long-lost father coming down. I mean, this was like, you read the psukkim, and everybody went out to greet them. So there's a very interesting dialogue, which we won't get into today, but it's just fascinating nonetheless. You look at this dialogue, it's strange. Vayomer Paro Yaakov. So Paro says to Yaakov, The first time they meet each other, what does he say to him?
How old are you?
How old are you? Yeah. So Yaakov says, Yimer Yaakov Aparo, I've lived here for 130 years. It's been bad. I'm not going to live long. And Yosef, Yaakov's complaining. I think maybe last year I talked about this in Shul once. This is a very fascinating question of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who was was in the Mir Yeshiva. Yaakov, Yaakov here is loses life. He loses 30 years of his life. When Paro comes down, Paro says to him, "How old are you? How are you?" Right? It's a strange question. Maybe that's how they greet each other in Egypt. So when someone passes you on the street and says, "How are you?" What do you say?
Fine.
I'm fine. Do you really start to tell him all your problems?
No.
My feet hurt. My exterminator's coming this week. I lost the watch this morning. You say fine. Yaakov opens up. It's been horrible. It's been bad. One of the commentators on the Torah says, if you count the number of words from Pasuk Ches through Pasuk Tes, it equals 33.
Really?
33. You can count it if you want, but it's 33. And he loses 33 years of his life because of this discussion. Because he wasn't talking, they've been bad, they've been good. Who's Yaakov to say that? So Chaim Shulevit says, why lose 33 years of his life? He should lose the years. I mean, it says, Me'at... why does he lose years for Vayomer Paro El? That's the narrator talking. It's the narrator. Why does he lose years for the narrator talking? So his answer is that Paro wouldn't have asked this question. It's because Yaakov looked so old. But he wore all his problems when asleep that he comes to Paro's office and Paro says, "What happened to you? How old are you? What happened in your life?" The fact that the question is even warranted to be asked by Paro is the reason that Yaakov loses these years of his life. But nonetheless, Yaakov comes down. So that's what I'm saying. There is a reason to bring the family down to Egypt. Yaakov knows that it's going to happen. So I just want to finish with the following. We were talking about the choosing. Yosef is the chosen leader. And he acts in that realm. And Yaakov acts as the leader. So it could be, my cousin suggests that Menachli, that it could be that this is the impetus for the brothers' actions. If you look at Yosef's dreams depict him not really as a god, but as a leader. He's the one in charge. And clearly that Yosef assumes himself like that. He tells his brother all these dreams. And all of Yaakov's sons are chosen. But Yaakov says, well, there's got to be not one reject, but there's got to be one leader. Can't have 12 leaders. So clearly, which one is Yaakov picking so far? Yosef. If you're in way back when? Yosef. But the brothers say, this is bad. I mean, look at this guy. And he's not acting like a leader. He's egoistic. It's all in his head. And maybe Yaakov has it wrong. Maybe he's not the right leader. Have we had that in Jewish history before? When one of the great leaders thought somebody was the right one and we had to trick him?
Yaakov
and Esav. Yitzchak thinks who's the leader? Esav. And I'm going to give Esav all the blessings. And even though Rivka might have lied and she wasn't moral perhaps, and you could talk about that, but she saves Jewish history because she puts Yaakov in his stead. So the brothers maybe see what's happening. Well, Yaakov loves this guy Yosef, but Yosef's not a leader. You can't have a leader like that that thinks he's better than everybody else. So maybe they take matters into their own hands. They take Yosef, and for the good of Jewish history, they do what they had to do. The brothers most likely are not acting, let's just kill him. I mean, it's strange. It's strange just to think like that because these are the Shvatim. I mean, these are Jewish history. Jewish history is not Avram Yitzchak. It's the 12 tribes of the sons of Yaakov. Could it really be that everybody except the tribe of Yosef, really Ephraim and Manasseh, that all the other tribes are just not nice and they're evil? That Jewish history has its origins in kidnapping and murder and lying? I mean, it's hard to fathom. So there has to be something that's pushing the brothers a little bit, and they have precedence. This maybe isn't the right leader. We need to reshape the leader. And it can't be Yosef, so we have to do away with Yosef. We also know, as I mentioned earlier, Yosef talks Lashon Hara about his brothers. I mean, Diba Samra Alavihem. He wasn't nice to them. So they had a lot of reason. Maybe Yaakov is convoluted. He doesn't see clearly. Yitzhak was the same way. So we're going to act in his stead. And it could be that was the greatest sin. The greatest sin of what the brothers did, and even though they might have had the best intentions in mind, when you're striving for a goal, you can't undercut certain principles.
Throwing him in a pit, they had the best things on his mind.
Meaning, like, Rivka, for example.
Yes.
So she has to trick her husband. Was she happy about that? Is it nice? No. Was that the right thing to do? We don't like to lie. But she had to do certain things. Sometimes we have this. Yaakov marrying two sisters. How could Yaakov marry two sisters?
It's not allowed.
It's not allowed. And after the Torah is given, it's for sure not allowed. And there are some explaining that Yaakov, before the Torah is given, certain things had to be done to save Jewish history. So maybe the brothers are acting in this way. And their sin is that even though it wasn't, even though they had good intentions in mind and they had a plan and they had precedents, you can't just simply, you know, undercut certain morals and ethics and that we have. I mean, it's like maybe Rivka just lied. She didn't kill anybody. And that's the sin. That's what we lament every year on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, that we have to keep our right to principles in mind. Yeah.
Maybe they even if they thought that maybe he would become the leader one day, he had to be taught humility and be taught to be more down.
Could be, yeah. I mean, you have to make a case though that, you know, they don't know what happens to him after they throw him in the pit.
No.
I mean, it seems that they just want to get rid of him.
They were getting rid of
him.
Remind me.
Just don't forget, Rivka has an out, because all she has to do is get the blessings to somebody else. She doesn't have to get rid of Esav. She could have killed Esav, but all she has to do is get Esav out of there and slide Yaakov in. If Yaakov thinks Yosef's a leader, I mean, there's only one way to get rid of Yosef, you know? Yeah, that's where the get rid of him comes from.
It's Yaakov's fault from the start.
Correct.
Because he gave him this cult. And he made him different than the brothers.
Understand? Yeah, so understandably. Now, it's not necessarily, you can't blame the sons of Yaakov for their, we don't pin.
For their jealousy.
Right, but correct. Yaakov does make a mistake in playing favorites, and that's why you'll see it.
Yaakov sees that from his home. I mean, he sees the favorites, and that's what happened to him. That's how he got chosen.
Right. We'll see. It comes towards the end of Parshas Vayechi. We see that Yaakov a little bit has changed. In terms of raising children and grandchildren, and who he blesses and how he blesses. I can't give it away because it's Ethan Frank's Ritzer speech. But if you come here, you'll hear why.
When are you doing that?
This Shabbos.
I know.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. I was going to ask you a question.
But basically, that's it. But we can't be blinded from the certain principles of moral behavior that we have. And even if they had the right intentions, that wasn't the right approach.
You're giving a label information. You're condoning by using that it creates Jewish history.
We are. Well, that's Asar Hurugim Malchus.
I know.
The 10 martyrs that we lament that every nothing wrong with that. We made a mistake.
But we can make a mistake. We're making Jewish history. Without the pit, they wouldn't have been picked up.
No. Who would have been picked up?
Yosef wouldn't have been picked up.
Oh.
That's all part of the plan.